Luke, I know you love a bit of quiz, mate.
I'm going to throw a bit of trivia.
You love a trivia. I'm going to throw one at you. And this is some lyrics to a song that I want to see if you can pick up and jump into with me.
Yeah. As we
go. Where is the light that would play in my streets? And where are the friends I could meet?
Left far behind. I don't have to sing
you
that.
You know this.
The spicks and the specks of the girls on my mind.
Dear Luke and Ben.
Welcome to Dear Luke and Ben. Is anyone still listening? That's the question. That was very spontaneous. So that's not contrived at all. We are that bad.
That I have the worst singing voice I've ever heard.
I just don't know how we've managed to sing on one or two or three episodes, probably even with proper musicians.
Probably behind your voice, which is equally the worst voice I've ever heard.
Mine is the worst voice. I mean, I'm a race caller. I'm not a singer.
I'm not joking here. I'm going to get singing lessons. So next season, because we've got some really great musical guests next season.
Well, we can't be this silly next season.
I'm going to bring it next season with a voice, with some tunes.
But mind you, I'm staring at a wall now. What's happened at the studio? I'm not making excuses. I do sound that bad, but the feng shui of the room is out.
That's so true, man. And that's on us. So when I thought the season was over and the season's not over.
This is it.
So the studio got a little bit of a workaround and all of a sudden we're sitting here staring at a wall and I really apologise for that.
It's kind of awkward. I don't think it's going to affect, Miff and this episode, but it is, it possibly affected our singing. But anyway.
Good point, Luke, because the reason of singing Spicks and Specks at the start was to introduce our amazing guest this week,
Miff Warhurst.
Which I'm really excited about. And Miff is an Australian treasure and we've watched her in our family since. I was actually thinking about this the other night with the kids. They used to sit on the lounge watching Spicks and Specks when their feet couldn't even reach the end of the lounge.
Well, my kids are a bit younger than yours and it's come back. It's back. I don't think it ever really waned, but it's back in popularity. And obviously she's in Bluey. She's generational.
Yeah. And I think the thing I love about Spicks and Specks is it's just easy to watch. It is just fun. It's cultural. You're learning and you're laughing the whole time. And that is it.
Yep.
In a world of very shit TV.
Yep.
It's beautiful TV, right?
It's a win. It's a win. So,
bit about Miff. So Miff is the, she's been a host of Triple J, Double J. She's the voice on Bluey, one of the best cartoons ever made.
Was she originally American Rosso's entertainment reporter?
Yep. She used to be on the Drive Show with Triple J.
Throw back to episode one with Rosso. Yep. Eurovision.
And the host of Eurovision.
She owns the biggest
music contest on the planet, which hopefully we can get to talk to her about, which would be really cool.
Let's do it. Miff Warhurst.
Miff Warhurst, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thank you for coming and joining us.
No problem. It's lovely.
Where are you right now? You don't need to give us away your secret location.
I'm in Melbourne in the outer sort of suburbs near the Yarra. Living my best life. I've just moved here and I'm loving the feeling of being around a lot more nature at the moment.
You know, if I think of Brunswick or Melbourne, I connect you with that so quickly. So it's a big change.
It's a huge change. I have lived in the inner city for most of my adult life, but I did grow up in the country. And I think after 2 years in lockdown, I've always wanted to do it, but the idea of going through something like this again, I just couldn't do it. And it's pushed me to make a few decisions that perhaps I was a bit scared of. And then now I'm just like, stuff it. I'm going. I'm going to do it. I'm going to give it a try. Okay. So
that's amazing.
In a new spot. Look, talk to me in a couple of years. I might be like, oh God, I'm sick of it.
Right. I'm so bored.
No way. Not in that home.
But right now, it's exactly where I want to be. And I don't know. I've never known that before. And I've tried lots of different spots. I've lived in Sydney, Melbourne, London.
It's changed a lot for us, hasn't it, Miff? Like I was saying. Even to other directors or writers, or even what Ben does, is you used to feel like you had to have that FaceTime, but now FaceTime has changed, which is kind of nice because you used to feel left out if you weren't there and there in the moment.
Well, I think culturally too, Australia's changing as well. Like think about a lot of things that came with work culture when we were starting out, say back in the 90s, there was drinking culture. 90s. All of that. Slowly going out of the window, there was very much that corporate culture. That's changed significantly. So I just think with all those changes, we don't necessarily need to be there as much.
We're stuck in the 90s. We can't leave. So, because music and movies and everything that was it was live music venues. It was and you can't just go to a bar and see a young punk rock band at, the Phoenician Club or the Strawberry Hills Hotel in Sydney. It's kind of like everything is changing. So it's good. This is a good chat to talk about where pop culture is in 2021 and where were we going anyway? When we used to get home in 1995, and I know you're with me, where you watch Rage at night and you watch your video clips.
Hosted
and
Rage.
You get up, hosted, and you get up and you watch Recovery with Dylan Lewis on Saturday mornings. And okay, and it's now there's so many platforms for artists, but does that mean it's easier to be seen? You know, it's changed so much, hasn't it?
There you go, Mitch. You got seven questions in one.
There you go. Sorry.
In a way, we're lucky we came from more of a monoculture. You know, everybody knew what we were talking about because there wasn't as much to choose from. And that was great. That gives us all connections that we might not have, say, because I know that we've got things in common because you grew up when I did, whereas I think it's very different now. It's no longer like that kind of monoculture. It's really disparate and it's all over the place. But in a way, that's also allowed other people to come in to the conversation. So you can see it as a negative, but you can also see it as a positive. It's allowed a whole lot of artists who would not have been exposed within that to get an in. And I think that, in a way, has opened up that world, the music world.
And do you think it changes music?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's absolutely changed music. I mean, we've got heaps more women now who are involved. There's heaps more people from diverse backgrounds, people that don't necessarily come or didn't grow up the way we did watching Countdown, you know, and they bring with them a whole world of musical influences that I think make it really exciting too.
Totally.
Even though it's freaking impossible to wade through, like I don't even know where music's at the moment necessarily. Yeah. I would say it is online, definitely. Platforms like TikTok have changed everything significantly. And I'm not even really, I don't really even necessarily look at a lot of TikTok stuff, but that's where it is at the moment, where artists from Africa are being played to a mainstream audience all around the world now. You know, like they're getting huge exposure through particular songs that we would probably, and we probably never would have known about them if it wasn't all that. So there are some really good things that have come out of the fact that music does seem online, but also it's so hard to navigate as well. I just feel old and lost a lot of the time. I'm like, how do I keep across if I can't?
Are we old in our 40s? Is that right? I don't think
but we're old. Not at all, but it makes me feel old because I used to know everything about everything and now I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Well, it's coming at you from so many different angles. I mean, Triple J used to be that like early 90s thing where you would see what's coming in, and whereas now there's kind of more avenues, but in a way it's opened up to so many more sort of like, you know, bands and so many sort of like more musical forms, which is great that it can bring in, but it's kind of like hard to navigate.
It's exploded to the point, I think, almost, you know, sometimes to the detriment, I think, of people latching onto things in the same way that perhaps we had the luxury of doing. Yep. I don't think we'd get something and it was really special, whereas now it's so available, and I think that's changed how people see.
When it's on a screen and when it's data-driven, it feels like it's at an arm's length, whereas before when you could go and buy the CD,
read the notes, see the cover,
to the gig, watch it, you know, it's such a personal thing, you know, and such a journey. Yeah. We just watched your latest season, Spicks and Specks, and my daughter, who's obsessed with you, she called you the Dr. Carl of music, which I thought was really funny.
Oh, my God, that's such an honour, but I'm not like him at all. Let me tell you, I'm not even close to Dr. Carl. I don't have impressive shirts of many patterns.
We can fix that.
Which is it, that can be fixed, but he's also he's like a bit more like Alan Bro, who's also he remembers everything, absolutely everything, and it kills me. Like, I'm pretty good at the 80s stuff because I grew up in the 80s and that was all really formative, so I remember all the lyrics and all the words and all the clips and all the people. And then the 90s, I was getting older, I was going out, I was having a lot more fun, so I remember it, but, you know, that's when things start to kind of fizzle out, and then anything onwards, 2000s onwards, I'm like, oh shit, I really struggle to remember, and it's because I got old and I've got a life, and it's like, but back then,
something nice about that.
Spicks and Specks is like, I've got an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old, and we watched the show. They didn't grow up with any of this music. The way that you talk about it, there's a pomp and ceremony around it, and this is what we get back to with the music and the pop culture is like, there was sort of like almost like a, you know, and your CD would come out and you go to Sanity or Virgin Music or, you know, HMV or whatever and get the album and you know, it's instantaneous now, whereas it used to be sort of like I'll wait and I'll lay by and I'll go get it.
Yeah, I'll take it home on APRO. Remember that when you go to a shop and you'd try on clothes and then you'd just see take it on APRO, which meant you took it home to see if your mum approved.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, like.
We used to do it in school.
I don't actually know what APRO is.
This generation is like, it's. I want it now. Can I just download it? It's like, well, why can't I get it right now? And the idea of like video shops are kind of crazy talking to them about, but and the reverence with which you guys talk on Spicks and Specs, I think that's the reason why the show's become a board game, you know, like we play it at home, and that is kind of a nice thing, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, it's a great honour to hopefully encourage others to think about people who make creative things like music with respect and to treat it with reverence because, I mean, what is a life without that stuff? Yeah. They give us so much joy, musicians give us so much joy and comedians and without that, our lives are not rich in the same way. And I think, yeah, the problem with all the platforms and everything that's happening at the moment is that I think that or it's not as valued and I think I don't know what the answer is, but we do need to get back to more respect for the musicians and you know, that they get paid better and that creativity is seen as a valuable part of our existence.
Almost every single conversation we've had on this series, be it with you, with Bob or Ben or Damon Herriman, always comes back to creativity as that common thread, the feeling like they need to create something and put it out in the world. And I still think in modern music, you know, if someone's still got that desire or urgency, you know, my kids play drums and it's annoying as shit, but they love it and you've got to encourage it.
So, that'll never go away.
Yeah, you never go away.
Drums.
Oh my God. But that to me is that feeling of you've got to give them an outlet. And I just think now what happens, and I know in my world is data, right? So in digital, when you put something out into the world and it's driven by an algorithm like Spotify is or something, what we hear is generally determined by what we listen to. So if that's the thing I'm listening to now or that's the thing I'm looking at on Facebook, then I'm going to get more of that. And that genre evolves and gives me more. So we almost lose our own creativity in a way to think and discover and to branch out.
Something outside that, yeah.
Yeah, that's I find that really challenging, you know. I still think there's people out there making great work and making great art. I just, you know, it's the data and the algorithms almost block it off from that.
It's true, but it's the way that, like when you do the show, it's like the way that you talk about, if someone says, what's the first line of that song lyric? Or like, it's the way that you respond to it that's like, that was what the art was created for, you know, like that reaction. It's a visceral kind of reaction. And that's what the kids pick up. My 11-year-old doesn't know when you're singing Islands in the Stream or something. They don't know what that means. They're like going, but they see how passionate you are about it. And then it becomes a thing.
Just laughing at my singing. I don't know.
we sung Islands in the Stream last week. Now, you'd never be embarrassed about that.
Such a great song, a great song. But also I think it's like food, music, movies, comedy, all of that stuff plays into your emotional memories. Like it's more than just a soundtrack. It's more than just this is what I loved at that time. It's like sense of smell. Like you hear a song and it, like that doesn't just trigger your memory of the song. It triggers your memory of the life.
On that point, right, so you and your family, so Kit, Rocket Science and yourself, what was a dinner table look like in your house when you were 15? Was it music and what were you talking about?
Oh, goodness me, probably talking about, you know, music and gigs. And I mean, I come from a musical family because Kit, as you know, my brother, he is the drummer in Rocket Science. He does stuff with Tim Ross musically as part of their comedy shows in significant houses. And my brother Andre is also a musician. He's an amazing guitarist. And my dad, Eddie, he was self-taught pianist and he used to play in the dance bands in the 50s. And so we all played music. Mum and they put on school musicals and town musicals in the small country towns that we lived in. Mum sang and, you know, like it's all very much been at the core of, I guess, who we were as a family.
So what gives you the confidence to know there's a career in that? Because, you know, you see it in music, a lot of families don't encourage to go out and say that's what you're going to create and that's what you're going to make and I've got your back. So what happened, how did that happen in your family? What was the difference?
Well, look, if you talk to my dad now, he'd say, oh, don't do that. Like he's an artist as well. He's like,
what are you doing?
Yeah, there's no money in that. Don't do that. Like, you know, the conversation on the phone with him is like, how's the finances and and how's work? But, you know, there's just that little bit of spark of creativity in all of us, I think. And it was nurtured and to the extent that I don't know. I mean, I started doing music at uni. I didn't actually do any kind of practical journalism or radio or anything like that. I started out doing music, and I was encouraged that mum and dad totally behind that because I think they were just really proud. But as it turned out, I didn't get past first year. I mean, I passed first year, but I wasn't very good. I wasn't going to be a concert pianist when I was faced with all the other musos that had just who were geniuses, and I was like, oh gee, I'm shit.
You still managed to influence music though for a generation.
So I went really in amazing. Other ways. There were other avenues in which to get in. And but the thing is too, I also realized you see it pretty quickly when you don't have natural aptitude in, like, I was classically trained, which is reading music, and I was good enough to get into a university course on audition, although it was probably because I was part of the country quota, I reckon. But like my brothers, Kit and Andre, have far more natural aptitude, I think, than me. They pick it up so much quicker. So when you start to see that and go, oh, that's not for me, I need to do something else. I never knew what it was I was going to do. So that was else, but I knew it would always involve music. It just fell into place.
It's nice to have that confidence, because you said earlier, you know, your dad rings up and it's always about money, but I think every dad will ring up their kids and it's always about money, no matter how much you've got or not. But it's amazing that, you know, if your love and passion is music and that's the thing you chased regardless, because a lot of people do the opposite, right? They chase the thing for the money and it's not the thing they love. You know, I find it just fascinating, and I've met your brother a bunch of times, and it's always inspiring, the connection to music, and you can see it when he's singing or playing with him or whoever it is, and it's so authentic and real. And I feel like if you can get back to that life where you go, that's the shit I'm going to do because I love it, man. It's like,
mind you, there was a, as I said to Benny, that there was a part of a bio that said you love pop music and trash TV as a child, and that was a line that was like part of a bio. So there you go.
And I made a career out of it.
There you go. Pop music and trash TV, not decent trash TV. Trash TV.
Well, I mean, like, I remember my mum wouldn't let me watch anything because we were an ABC family, you know. We only watched the news on the ABC.
Oh, ABC. So what's trash? Give me some trash TV shows.
Trash TV shows in the 80s. I mean, Dallas, Dynasty, all of those.
Dallas, yeah.
I was never allowed to watch them because, you know, they were just, there was bitchiness and catfighting and murder and intrigue. All of that. Which I loved, and shoulder pads and perms, which I cannot get enough of. So, yeah, there was that, and, you know, even like Neighbours and things like that.
Bad, considered.
Pretty lowbrow, but I loved it, you know, and I don't think they're lowbrow at all. I think they're actually they're telling stories that are as old as time. But it's like reality TV now. Same sort of thing. You know, you have your characters. It's telling those stories that in order for us to understand ourselves better, at least try to, or fictionalise our experience. So, you know, it can be as trashy as you like, but I will stand up for it.
My parents still religiously watch Bold and the Beautiful, you know, like, and I mean, it's nuts, man. Totally. Like, they're 75. Plus, and they're watching Bold and the Beautiful, and this is long after the Poncho Ron Moss, you know, Ridge has gone away. There's a new Ridge, and everything has changed. Because at university, I used to Bold and the Beautiful, and you know,
you watched it, did you?
Yeah, occasionally watched it. Yeah, no, but it's the same characters, and yet they go through five or six actors. And
I did catch my daughter, my 18-year-old daughter, watching L.A. Law. What is that about?
L.A. Law. Oh my god,
dude, that's old school. L.A. Law.
What was the theme song for L.A. Law? I remember it. And
that's the back in the late 80s, man. Harry Hamlin.
We are good at singing theme
songs. No, there was no lyrics. It was just sort of like
Jimmy
Smits and Harry Hamlin, and there was L.A. Law, man.
Hey, speaking of nostalgia, did you see Get Back by the Beatles? Peter Jackson.
I haven't watched it all, but I saw what they showed at the preview. So I went to the preview screening, which was amazing, and essentially they showed more the build up to the concert on the roof.
Yeah, it's right.
And I loved it. Like, I loved it. I don't know if I've got 8 hours in me, but
I skipped season two. Episode two, went straight to the end of three. Watched all of one. That's a long watch. But it's amazing. But I feel like you get the whole vibe.
How did you know what to skip? Like, you just like you assumed you'd skip.
Just watch the thing going really fast on the screen, then I stop when they go on the roof.
That's right. Done.
You know what I loved about it though? Like, it just, these guys had all gone away, and, you know, you could see, like, all the things that everyone was saying about how, you know, Yoko broke up the Beatles and all that rubbish, like, they were already going their own ways, and you can tell by
Totally.
But the joy of watching them come together and communicate and bond through their music, and was just, it was life-affirming. Like, that, it was just, you can see it. Yeah. You can see the magic, and it just came together like that, and it gave them so much pleasure, and that's how they communicated beautifully. But, you know, even though it was all a bit frayed at the edges, and I loved that feeling.
It inspired me to do my first tweet in 3 years, which was I just fell in love with Paul McCartney.
Oh, didn't we all?
God. Is that real? Is that really you in Bluey?
That's me. I'm Aunt Trixie.
So amazing.
And I'm not typecast at all. I only turn up for parties, and I only turn up to distract mum and take her away from the kids. And no, it's definitely me. I love it. It was a wonderful experience. I worked with them on one of the creators on another project, and they got me in, and it was funny actually. They got me in to do an audition to do the mum role, but I had a nodule at that time on my vocal cords when I'd just come back from living in England, and I don't know how I got it, and it might have been an anxiety thing or something, but I think I sounded like I had too many, like I'd had a pack of cigarettes or something a day back at that in those days. Yep. So yep. My voice was too, I think it was too old and husky to play the mum. So they came up with this character, Aunt Trixie, for me, which was just beautiful. And at this point, I hadn't met any of them in person or anything, and they're in Queensland and I'm in Melbourne, so it's all been very remote. I just got sent scripts and I'd record them. And the thing is, like you said about Spicks and Specks, there's loads of kids that watch it. I don't have kids, so I didn't know that kids are a fan of that, and I didn't know the extent of Bluey either, except Alan Rowe from Spicks told me, you know, like in the playground, all the kids just look at him like, because they know.
Yeah, they know.
And,
yeah.
And then I found out, you know, through friends with kids how big it was.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Totally. It's massive.
And also Bluey, how big Bluey is. What? It's just,
it punches way above the age limit that it should be, you know, hitting, which is, you know, 5, 6, 7 year olds. It's like the teenagers watching it just going, you know, it's wonderful. And it's like, it's got rock star status now, you know, even though they don't push the names, and obviously they don't put the credits of the kids and stuff, you know, but it's people know who's, well, the adult voices anyway, but it's like, it's really cool, you know?
I know. I couldn't believe my luck now. Like, now that it's become the huge success, I'm just waiting. I'm hoping they do a Disney movie so I can be a voice in the Disney movie. That would be amazing, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen. So
that should happen. We'll see. Luke, Shanahan, you up for a
Pixar. Okay. Yeah. They used to say that those American Pixar films would write for their parents, so the parents, you know, the parents could watch it as well. But I think that Bluey is just so, it's so smart, you know. Like, yeah. I mean, we're watching it and laughing it.
Not together.
Your 18-year-old is watching it, though, and like going, oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, she'll be killing me for this. She'll be listening to me right now going, what, Dad?
Yeah, what? There you go.
Don't tell all my secrets. You're in trouble. You're not speaking to you.
What are you working on next?
I think part of what I've gone through in the last 2 years is just working out what I want from my life. I've started doing foster care as well. So, you know, I've opened up my house to kids who are in need, and yeah, it's great. Like, it's nothing to do with work or anything, but I just feel like it's time to start living the life I've always wanted, you know, or at least. At least working towards an idea of that rather than, I guess this business means we get thrown around a lot, you know. Yeah. You just do what comes up and something else and you're off on that direction and you do this, whereas this was me finally. And, I mean, I'm nearly 50, for fuck's sake. Like, yeah. I should have done this a long time ago, but finally I said, what do I want? Where do I want to go now?
Do you think COVID played a role in that clarity or not?
Yeah, I think so. I think it did. I think it absolutely did.
Yeah.
And I think I've been really lucky, but you can see it happening around. I think it's for me, it was important to cultivate something outside of that gave me purpose.
So to ask you a question then, so because there's a lot of talk around, especially Melbourne, I think you guys got absolutely screwed on the lockdowns. You got fucked completely. But there's been a lot of conversations I've had with people around, it sucked, but geez, I got some clarity on this. And, you know, so if you look back and you go, what from 2019 do you bring into the future, or is it just a fresh start?
Yeah. Oh, look, it's both. I bring everything I learned and then feeling like I'm starting fresh, but also, you know, really enjoying my experience as well. Like I said, I'm a middle-aged woman. I've got a lot of experience, and I think hoping to go into the next bit with a bit more confidence about that and just – you know, I can't say whether or not we might have another season of Spicks and Specks coming. I'm not saying any words on that, but so that's
surely.
I'm writing a book at the moment
I'm going to just sort of cut you off there. You don't look 50. It is incredible. I'm 44. I thought you were way younger than I am. I thought you were low end of 40s.
You know I've got the Zoom filter on, though. Yeah, just between you and me and whoever's listening.
I'm not a year over 37.
I actually don't believe you at all. No, but I've seen it. I've always thought that. I always thought you were younger than me forever.
I'm 48, but I had to try and work out if I was 48 or 49 the other day with a girlfriend. I always thought that I was a year older than her. So, you know, but it doesn't matter when you get to this age. But also, I just want to enjoy things.
Yeah,
and,
it's so good.
And the anxiety that comes with choosing a career like this where work does come and go, I think I've been trying to be cool with that and just go, I've got the knowledge and the experience. If someone wants it, it's there. They can call me, but I'm not going to get. I've got other things going on outside of that work, and I'm not going to get. I'm going to try not to get too stressed when you know. Yeah.
If you look at the outside in and you go, God, if I could design a life for myself, it would be a life in the arts where you do have the ability to step into something fully and step out of it and have that space. And in that space, you're going to go and move where you want to move, create, want to write a book. Like it's insane, right? At 50 years old, you're sitting there going, "That's the thing you're doing." It's a pretty beautiful place to be. Like, it's incredible.
I feel really privileged.
I'm inspired by that.
And that's why I wanted to do foster care too, because
beautiful.
You know, I am in a position to help. And now that I'm doing it, I did a lot of training. I did that during COVID too, about 6 months of training. So it's not easy either. But just having little kids, you know, come to your house and
how many kids have you had through?
I've only had two so far, but you know, different ages. I think you realise how much more we can do.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Like, because these little kids just come in and then, you know, I've only been doing emergency cares. They're dragged out of situations. And, like, I just think about me growing up and at that age, how terrifying that would be to go to a stranger's house.
Yeah. But how blessed you were as well to have that family, right? So you had that tight knit relationship with your brothers and everything. My mom used to have this thing where she would bring home. She was involved in a Down syndrome program for kids to work in her. She owned an indoor sports center, so she would bring them home. And she got so involved in the program that she would bring them home, and we would cook them dinner, and they'd stay in our house for two or three nights a week. And mum would make us sit down at dinner and have conversations, and it was so interesting because you get so absorbed in my own life, my own world as a teenager. You quickly lose that, you know, when you just sort of go, well, someone else's life is also needing some support, and it's a pretty powerful thing. So, yeah, hats off to you, man. I think it's amazing.
Oh, look, it's not. I mean, I like I said, I don't have kids, and it was never something I really.
You're changing someone else's life.
I would have had them if I'd really put my mind to it, I think. Mm. I flirted with the idea, but now I'm like, well, I haven't got that stress that other people who have kids have, so I can actually use that time to help some kids who really need it.
So good.
You know, it's good. I'm learning a shitload about something, and it terrifies me. It terrifies me because I don't know what I'm doing.
I've just had my third is 8 months. I've got no idea what I'm doing, and it's so yeah. And I still don't know what I'm doing. So, Miff, don't worry about that.
Really? Oh, that's good.
I'm he's like, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Gives me hope.
Doing great. Yeah. I mean,
my job is just to give him a nice little good time and a bit of respite away from whatever's going on.
Totally.
And I can do that. I can do that. That's, you know, it's my role on Bluey. Aunt Trixie just turns up and eats all the chips.
Yeah.
You know, and offers a good time. Like
one quote that was by you when Spicks and Specks first ended, and you said that it was amazing because you got to hang out with your idols. Dish the dirt. Who's your idols?
Yeah, I think you have idols when you're younger because you don't realise that life is a series of peaks and troughs.
Yeah.
And a musician's life is a series of peaks and troughs. And so meeting your idols is something you aspire to, but once you're in it, you no longer aspire to it because you see all the reality around you. Everyone's just a person, you know, and we've all got our faults and our great bits and talents and all of that sort of stuff. So I guess when I met all my idols, they would have been my idols when I was a teenager, you know, or a little kid. So it would have been all the 80s pop stars, you know, you got your, all the Australian 80s pop stars that I would have just pinched myself to have met when I was a little kid growing up in a small country town, you know, 500 kilometres, 600 kilometres from the nearest Big Smoke. And we only had one radio station and a telly, one TV station or two TV stations, and I could never have imagined that I would hang out with
people totally.
Like that. And I think that's sort of they were the idols then, you know,
Who's the lead singer of Duran Duran? What's his name? Simon?
Simon Le Bon.
Simon Le Bon.
Years ago, I'm assuming you've met Simon Le Bon.
No, never. Okay. I'd go to fucking water if I met Simon Le Bon.
Really? Okay, so my wife got invited to...
I would
to...
just lose my mind. And I think that's the, you know, the 10-year-old girl in me still.
My wife had a moment with him. So in another life, I owned a clothing label and we had this really cool denim jacket with a Union Jack on the back in denim, right? Just blue denim and I loved it and I was wearing it home one night. Anyway, she got invited to go to Simon Le Bon's record label for their last album in Sydney. Anyway, so she's like, can I wear your denim jacket? That's so cool. I think I need to wear a denim jacket. I'm like, yeah, cool, go for it. That's great. She comes in at midnight and I'm like, where's my jacket? She goes, oh, Simon Le Bon took it. He loved it. I'm like, what the fuck? He just comes up and goes, I love your jacket. And she goes, no worries, all yours.
He took it. He stole it. He borrowed it for a bit.
She probably went to water like you said and just said.
She would have gone to water. She'd just gone, Simon Le Bon's come up and tapped her on the shoulder and gone, I love your jacket. She goes, you can have anything you want.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Bless. Hungry like the wolf. We'll say that's what those boys were.
I bet you are.
Oh, you bet.
All right.
Hey, so Eurovision. Now, we've got to get to Eurovision.
Got that coming up too. How can I forget that?
Is it becoming more credible, Miff, and not just with you doing it? I mean, felt like it did get more of a – now that there's actually real bands and music and there's songs now. And then you were hosting and it became not just a party, let's get together for a Melrose Place party, Eurovision party.
There's a question in here somewhere. There's a question coming.
Yeah, no. Here it is. I'm just kidding.
There it is.
Here it is. No, I said, is it more credible? Is Eurovision credible?
I think it is becoming more so on a critical level. The band that won last year, Maneskin, the Italian band that do the great rock numbers and wear fabulous, fabulous fashion clothes and really embody that sort of enthusiasm of a young rock and roll band. And they're now on the Coachella bill this year. That's a huge, huge change because I think people were either the winners of Eurovision were either, you know, big ballads or a real cultural song that would indicate or be indicative a country style of music or they'd be a big pop act. And pop, as we know, historically has never been deemed as kind of...
serious, yeah.
As serious as other music, which in actual fact is incorrect, absolutely incorrect, because pop music takes just as much talent and skill, if not more so, to construct a perfect pop song. So, yes, I do think it is becoming more credible in that the acts aren't necessarily just isolated to those type of genres. You can be anything, and the audience is so huge. It's global, and it's millions, and it's just nuts. And so I think countries are trying harder and harder to tap into that. But the best thing about Eurovision is that it's like anything. It's like when someone tries to create a pop hit. The harder you try, the more mistakes you will make. And there's always those acts that just get it so wrong every year, and that. To me, is what Eurovision is. You've got some terrible stuff and then you've got some wonderful stuff and some funny stuff, and it's all
entertainment, though. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the stuff that gets it a little bit wrong. They're always my favourite.
Totally. So,
I want to come back to your question really quick. When you say credible, as opposed to what, like a 90s rock band?
Yeah, no, totally.
What do you hear?
No, look,
On that note, credible is very different now. Like in the 90s, there was some things were cool and other things were definitely not cool. So I think people don't have that sense of they're not as blocked off as perhaps we were back then in terms of what we thought was cool. You know, like you can cherry pick from lots of different genres and styles now, and you can be into everything because you can access everything. You don't need to be only into one thing and I don't listen to anything else. Like people listen to everything. So I think that because the world has changed, that Eurovision also has become less of a joke, but still has enough hair and enough, you know, wind machines and
I think Eurovision went into a little bit of a chasm,
especially in Australia, and that's why it's so big here too. It's lots of families who'd come from other countries, migrated to Australia. That was their one connection. They'd watch Eurovision. It was one connection with everyone back home, and they could all watch it in real time or maybe a little bit delayed. But, like, it was kind of a beautiful connector between their past and their present. And
it's like the Ashes cricket test match for me and my dad.
Exactly. Cricket, you know, the great global bonder. Eurovision was a bit like that too. Gave them something to talk about with people from home.
So I'm going to give you five quiz questions.
Okay.
And Benny's going to give you, I think,
just five randoms.
You're going to know this. Like we
don't say that because I might know. I might not know.
Oh, okay. Well, we can cut some stuff. So
no.
Okay. So you'll get it. You'll get them easily. So Nirvana's first album.
In Utero.
Do you know the answers to these, Luke?
Yeah, I do. I've got.
In Utero was the third album.
Yes. No, that wasn't the first album.
You're talking to someone with COVID brain too.
Okay, Bleach. Oh,
okay. Bleach.
So the first, like, I listened to your face. I know you're a huge. You're a huge Napoleon Dynamite fan. I love that interview with John Hedder. Like it wasn't Napoleon Dynamite. That same year they released their first MTV film. Do you know what that
That's
was?
A tough question.
I wouldn't have a clue.
That was Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Ah, of course, it had a musical angle. Yeah,
There you go.
Yeah.
Good question, Luke.
How many studio albums did Silverchair have?
Oh, these are hard.
Jesus, these are hard.
Are they really?
You're getting a gig on Spix.
Really? These are really specific. Like, you'd have to be a hardcore Silverchair fan to know.
Give me five members of we talked about the 27 Death Club before.
Jim Morrison, Amy Winehouse, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, who else?
That was amazing.
That's four. Yep.
Oh, no. I'm trying to think of five.
I love the expression on your face when you're stuck. That is brilliant. And when you got something wrong, that was gold.
I know. And that's the thing. People go, oh, you must cheat on Spix and Specs because you guys know so much. And I'm like, no, I fucking don't, because I wouldn't lose so often. if they were cheating, they wouldn't let me lose all the time.
The anger should get wrong.
90s. Well, Nirvana.
There you go.
What's his name?
Well, Kurt Cobain. Yeah. That guy. Okay. Yeah. Last one. But every time we watch you on, like, you get, like, you're incredible. Like, you're
very,
like,
competitive, Miff.
They don't ask me to list five albums, like, count.
He's very competitive, isn't he?
Sorry, Miff. We'll edit this out. Fuck. It's like.
I liked it. Go. It can go in. No, I don't know everything.
Jeez. God, that was brutal. But, yeah, I would have got all of those, but I just thought I was leaving it to you to see.
Thank you.
Okay, number one song of all time. I have got your list here of your top 10.
Yep.
I did the Australia's Favourite Albums, I think. Yeah, that was back in 2005. Are you expecting me to remember?
No. I'm not expecting to remember those. But, I mean, what's your number one song of all time?
Number one song. This is like asking people to choose their favourite children.
No one can ever answer this.
It kind of is, but
it's got to be Islands in the Stream.
Yeah, there you go. Because that is something that I sung with my wife at our wedding, and it's like Ben said that Miff's favourite song is Islands in the Stream, and we sung it last week with Gillies.
Well, when Gillies said, how does it go, we both looked at each other and we couldn't work it out, but we couldn't remember the start. We just got the chorus. How does it start?
Maybe when I met you there was peace on earth.
I have to find you with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah. Written by the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
Well, Barry, and then given to, well, it was either given to Kenny or Dolly, I'm not sure, but they were just so magical.
Amazing.
And that was considered trashy and cheesy back in those days.
Yeah, it's an incredible track.
Because they moved Kenny and Dolly moving out of country, moving into a more pop realm, and it was a super cheesy song, and they were derided in the country world, and people who like music didn't think Kenny and Dolly were great musicians, but how the world has turned on that one too.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And I think everyone knows the magic and the value of Dolly Parton now, which is so great. But she was derided for so long, you know, a genius.
For a long time, Dolly was a joke, you know, like Dolly was the big boobs and the short, and it was like, you know, and when people discovered that she, you know, I will always love you, that, like, that came, you know, she was the original with that. And I think people were like, what? Her Dolly Parton was kind of a punchline.
Yeah, well, she was, but she knew it, and she always had a joke to make sure she would counteract that punchline. You know, the higher the hair, the closer to God. It costs a lot of money to look this cheap, all that stuff. She was business savvy, you know. Elvis's manager tried to buy I Will Always Love You and didn't offer her enough money, or at least, you know, wanted 50% of the rights or whatever. She refused. So she refused to give her song the biggest musical star in the world at that time, because she knew that it was better, like she deserved better than that. So she's always known her value, even though she was considered or deemed a joke. But musically, anyone who knew about music knew that she had the musical chops, and she was also, you know, she's a comedic genius.
Recently, I saw a quote that my daughter sent me about Dolly Parton, and she says, decide who you want to be, decide how you want to look, create that look, and then just live your best life and live it as true as you can. And I love that. And it sort of explains away the fact that if people want to get a facelift, hey, that's okay, if that's the thing that makes them happy, you know. And
yeah, stop sitting in judgment at what other people do. Take a look in your own backyard and sort your own shit out, you know. Like, it's
so true.
I feel like the world's changing too. We're done with judging others in such a negative way, especially women. And I think that's why the rise of Dolly Parton has been so phenomenal, is that people now are looking beyond all that surface stuff, which she cultivated as an image.
Serious question. Your top 10 lists of all time. How was Def Leppard not in your top 10? That top, anyway.
Def Leppard.
Oh, my God. I loved Def Leppard when I was a kid. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
Right there. Yeah, that was them.
Pour some sugar on me.
Yeah.
Pour some sugar on me.
Yeah. What about Hysteria? Dance a few slow dances to Hysteria.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was romantic.
Love Bites.
Oh, Love Bites, Love Bleeds. Bring me to my
knees. He's been waiting for this. Like, yeah, so he's been waiting to get someone to sort of like just go with him for a minute. So.
If you pulled that out, I would be a very happy person if you said, here we go. We're going to listen to some Def Leppard right now.
I love it.
I would not say no ever. I loved it.
I literally love them. It's the best gig where you've just turned up and gone, wow.
Amel and the Sniffers.
Yeah, well, they're still going great, huh? Yeah. Love Amel and the Sniffers.
I think globally the world is ready for their just low down, dirty, good time, fun vibes. I think the world is ready.
Love Amel and the Sniffers. Yeah, so that's a good thing if it's there.
But, you know, it's like you said, there's so many now, it's hard to know. And I think, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to pan out for the artists if people are in for the long haul like we were, like you were for the 5 Silverchair albums that we had before. But, you know, like we were in for the long haul, and I'm not sure that even exists anymore necessarily. Mm. Like people don't really latch on and commit to an artist in the same way. It's with that. So that would make it very difficult.
No, they don't. Because we're stuck in the 90s so here, Mish. Yeah, that's like, it's not just every week. We're like, it's not. Yeah.
Sad, isn't it?
The golden years, but I like to think that they were golden years, but back then we weren't tainted by, you know, financial responsibility and career pressure and all of those things. I think that adds an extra bit of magic dust to those memories, because it wasn't as difficult, as life wasn't as heavy as it was as but it is now.
I used to get home at 1 o'clock in the morning drunk, and you'd put on Rage and you'd just put the video clips on, and you only had 4 channels, and like you found something and you were kind of happy.
It's such a simple time. It was an innocent time, and so I think I feel very thankful we had that experience.
Same.
Yeah.
Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton. I know exactly where to go.
Well, interviewing Kenny Rogers has got to be one of the highlights of my life, I've got to say.
Amazing.
Cause, you know, yeah, that was, you know, I was in love with the original bearded country journeyman back in the 70s, and our whole family used to sing along to the Kenny Rogers Best Of tape in the car. And so, you know, it's just like, well, full circle, there you go. And Dolly is, you know, I always wanted to be Dolly. I haven't got the hair or the waistline, but.
Lovely.
Well, thank you for your time and carving out over an hour with us. I really appreciate it. And thank you for giving us continuous on this journey back in history over music over and over and over again through Spicks and Specks and through the radio.
Yeah.
It's so powerful and so important.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you. It's been
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And we got there in the end, right? We made it.
We got there.
And me not remembering Kurt Cobain. I have a real block with Nirvana, I think, because there was that one question on Spicks and Specks where I forgot Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Oh, that was famous, huh? Yeah, I remember that.
Famous, because I was on Triple J at the time, and like, no one had talked about Nirvana because it was 2005 or something when this happened. No one had talked about Nirvana for 10 years, so it wasn't in my head. And it would have been like, you know, when you're 30, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, and you didn't know what it was. I remember that.
And it was only my second show, and I was like, I've never done telly like that before. There was lights and there was cameras, and I fucking forgot. I never lived it down because I worked at J. So it was, and so it seems like whenever there's a Nirvana question, I go into shock.
Shit.
It just blocks it. Like I could not think of Kurt Cobain's name, the most famous music person in history.
All right, well, thank you so much again. Really appreciate your time.
Amazing. Yeah, that was awesome.
Thanks, Sal.
Islands in the Stream.
Yeah, we're done with the singing.
Sorry, mate.
Yeah, we're done with the singing. I think we've done enough, and I think people have proved our point that we can't sing. Ben Gillies said you could hit a harmony. We could hit a harmony, and I don't know what Miff thought.
Ben also called me a 90s smooth FM radio DJ.
Yeah, you're very smooth FM. But what a great chat, and what a great way to end the series.
It's exactly how I thought you would be.
Yeah.
Exactly. How stoked are you that you just keep getting these massive 90s dopamine hits and just going back?
Yeah, I don't know where we can go next. Well, mind you, there's lots more 90s icons we can tap on for next series.
I'm looking forward to next series where we can get a guest.
From the 80s.
That does 70s. Not talk about the 90s, that we can talk about something different.
Absolutely.
Like Flat Earth.
Well, Bob, we didn't talk a lot with Dr. Bob last week.
That's true.
We didn't.
You did find a way at the 27 Death Club. You went there really quickly with Jimi Hendrix. So there you go. talking Kurt Cobain.
27 somehow, Death Club.
Somehow.
Yeah, Kurt I do Cobain like that. But I mean, everything we set out to do with this podcast could be summed up by Miff Warhurst as a guest. 100%. Entertaining, enlightening, you know, inspiring, funny, you know, the humility.
Creative,
you know,
thoughtful.
Creative. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
When we set out to build this podcast at the very start, we wanted to
sing.
Yes. But we also wanted to ask one big question, but also get someone sitting behind that to answer that with humility, honesty, integrity, creativity. We got away from the big question really quickly. We connected with these people's stories in a way that I think is just mind-blowing. And I've learned more from this series than I have, I think, in terms of my business life last 10 years. You know? It's extraordinary.
And it didn't come from us, which is what we set out to do, because no one really wants to hear cricket stats or us singing.
Well,
there is.
Mark Taylor.
You're promising. You know what I mean? Mark Everyone Taylor's is waiting to get a cricketer.
I just can't believe Mark Taylor's not on yet. Next episode, mind you, the bonus episode. Next week.
Yep.
Which is called Guestless. Which is just me and you reviewing the series and talking about some insights. I want to share one thing that I learned from when you were talking to Ben Baker about making a TV commercial, you said you were trying to bring a bit of Kubrick to selling a burger.
Did I? Yeah.
And when you said that with a bit of tongue in cheek joking, and I was with you. I'm going, that is funny. And then Ben Baker said, but you should bring that, Luke. You should bring that to every single thing you do. You know, if you're inspired by Kubrick, bring Kubrick. If you're inspired by something, bring it. And that's my biggest lesson, man. And I reckon my approach to this podcast was different the minute I heard that.
Oh, man, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, well, I mean, you try and just be the best version of yourself. And I guess, I mean, it comes down to the fact that we love what we do. You know, and I think this podcast is bringing out people that are managing to do that. And that hopefully is inspiring.
Yeah.
Well, my guest next week is going to be Ben Rennie. Who's your guest?
It's Luke Shanahan for Guestless.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Well, I feel better now. See ya.